you do, cause somebody has to do the things you see worth doing. Go where you go, cause somebody has to go. Places that are worth going. You can build your lonely house on higher ground. From there where you stand, you can watch the world spinning round. If you sweep those palace streets, one day you will be crowned.
All right, folks, you're listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca, and we're live, of course, right here in Southern Ontario on Joy 1250. Up next, Rob Bell, New York Times best-selling author of so many books, but his latest one is why he's on the show today. This popular pastor and New York Times best-selling author of Love Wins and What We Talk About When We Talk About God shows us in his latest book how to pursue and realize our dreams, live in the moment, and joyfully do the things that make us come alive. Each of us was created for something great. We just need to figure out what that thing is and find the courage to do it. Whether it's writing the next great American novel or the next great Canadian novel or starting a business or joining a band, like maybe a Kiss cover band, Rob Bell wants us to dream those dreams and make those dreams become a reality, right? Our path is hours and hours alone to pursue, and in doing so, we derive great joy because we are living our passions. This bio blurb thing goes on and on and on, and if you want to read it, you can go to our website and read it, but I'd rather talk to Rob Bell because he's on the line with us. RobBell.com, that's the website. So I have so many questions for you, like the last time. Wait, do you even remember the last time you were on our show? I think every interviewer thinks that every guest remembers them, but that's just so untrue.
No, I was on with my wife and I, right?
Yeah, good call.
And you were trying to, like, throw her off, and she just kept bringing it, and I was quite proud of her. That's what I remember.
Yes, she did. Beavis did quite well. Quite well.
Yes.
How is Mrs. Zum-Zum? Zim-Zum? Tim-Tam? What is it?
Well, I'll tell you, Mrs. Zim-Zum is fantastic. She sprained her ankle, so she's on crutches, and that's got her a little bit, you know, she's not the happiest, but she's great.
What is with you guys and injuries? Because basically this whole book came as a result of your concussions, right?
Yes.
I mean, and by the way, yes. Have you learned how to wakeboard properly yet?
Well, the incident you're referring to was when I hit my head doing backflips. I think it was the 15th backflip that I over-rotated and hit my head and had a closed head injury. But that's what happens, you know, when you try new things.
You know, most people who have cool stuff happen to them as a result of a concussion end up becoming like a musical genius or mathematical genius. But you're an author, and here's what happened to you. You wrote a book.
Yeah, 15 years later.
Yeah, I know.
And what's really funny is I may have at the time, you know, I was out of work for a week or two, like said, oh, by the way, I hit my head. That's why I wasn't at work. But beyond that, I didn't really talk about it for 15 years.
Well, you just went right into my next question because you were 30 when all this went down. You know,
it's almost like one of those things that happened to you in life that you realize how they affected you way down the road. You know what I mean?
Right,
you trace all these branches back to that trunk of the tree, and you're like, oh, that's what kicked in gear all sorts of things that I'm only now piecing together.
So you had 1 week where you were forced to live completely in the present, right?
Yeah, basically whatever the head injury concussion was, my brain didn't have the energy to think about the future, which is where worry comes from. It didn't have energy to think about the past, which is where regret comes from. I could only be right here, right now, in this moment, having a conversation with you, eating a burrito, staring at the wall, whatever it was. And it wasn't that the present moment was not enough. It was that it was too much. It was incredible.
Do you wish you could ever have that, like, the same kind of a week again? I'll give you an example. A few years ago, for the last week of Lent, I gave up my eyesight for the entire week. I had a friend of mine who's an optometrist who sourced out some black contact lenses for me, or some non-see-through contact lenses, and I put those in, and I went a whole week being blind, and on Easter morning,
incredible.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool thing, and I took them out. So this is what I'm thinking about at this time of year. Every time Easter comes around, I think about when I did that. And I also think, man, I mean, only because it wasn't permanent blindness, I would love to do that again. Now, I don't love it that much, or else I would have done it again. But every once in a while, I think, oh, there's some aspects of being blind that I miss. Do you wish you could ever have that same kind of a week?
Absolutely. And I think what happened is I was like the rest of us. You're responding to emails. You're answering phone calls, text. You're driving here. You're driving there. You're doing your go, 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 go. And all of a sudden, I was just in the moment, and my life was so much better. And it created this – it's almost like I created a hunger for a food that I didn't know previously existed. You know what I mean? It was like I would love to live like this and not feel like I'm missing out, but that I'm totally right here in the moment. And then it was like, well, how do you live like that? Especially if you have to like raise kids and be in a relationship and go to work and mow the lawn and all that stuff. And the book was essentially 15 years of I had a peak experience and then trying to learn how to live more like that in the course of everyday life.
Right. Okay. So Rob Bell, Mr. Mega Church dude, Mr. Numa video guy.
That feels like a different life.
Yeah. Well, totally. Yeah. When you were the other Mars Hill guy, you could not have written this book. There's no way you could have written this book. You had to stop being pastor guy and just be on tour with Oprah guy and be able to slow down enough, surf every day to write this book.
Oh, that is a fantastic observation. It's really interesting when you're a pastor in a local church, as people think of what a pastor is. You keep telling people every Sunday, all of life matters, all moments are holy, your life is sacred. You know what I mean? You tell people all these things. Then you leave being a local church pastor and you find out those things are true.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's almost like you build a temple and then you tear the temple down because the whole thing is a temple.
Yeah.
My life, I find more meaning in everyday interactions, more significance having a meal with friends. I enjoy my kids like never before. Huh. I find my work more rewarding than ever. So it's going well. And that's interesting that you say that that book could have been written. That's fascinating. I'll have to think about that.
Well, hold on. Are you saying I'm right? Are you saying I don't know? Are you saying I'm wrong? What are you saying?
I'm saying it's a great observation. The head injury was a disruptive experience. It was like, wait, I'm going 100 miles an hour, but I think the action might not be going 100 miles an hour. The real meaning in life is moving much slower. So I think while I was still a local church pastor, these ideas were beginning to take root in me. Huh. So I was this more like a long, slow evolution in a certain direction than it is all of a sudden I woke up one day and was like, I could write that book, but I couldn't before. But yeah, there is something about my new life that there's a certain freedom and joy that this book comes from that I think, and from what I can tell from the reaction to the book, people are picking up on.
Okay, we're talking to Rob Bell. He's the author of this latest book called How to Be Here. Rob, there's, you know, typically in an interview with me, there's something that rubs me the wrong way. So here we go with this.
Fire away. Okay. I can't wait.
No, it's you've heard this before. People trying to survive, right? Trying to put food on the stinking table.
Absolutely.
Or trying to just keep it together, right? Trying not to throttle their kids or divorce their wife or whatever. They don't have time to drop in, man. They don't have time to get into themselves. They're not running around trying to find mirrors, you know, for their soul. Some of the most self-involved people I've ever met in my life are these ones who drop in all the time, these yoga people. And there's a reason poor people don't do yoga.
Okay, first off, I totally know what you're saying. If you are buying a book about how to have more joy in your life or feel more fulfilled, you are way up the pyramid of needs. Can we all agree to that?
Yes, yes.
Secondly, there are basic levels of putting food on the table, getting some health insurance, that this is not a book about how to get gas in the tank to get to your job. The flip side is I started out working with people across the spectrum and lots of people who are in, I'm just trying to not hurt somebody at work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to hold down a job. And a lot of the ideas in the book came out of my work with people just struggling to survive and helping them turn things around in their head and heart. Because for many people, life was happening to them. And they saw themselves as just reacting to all of these terrible, awful, stressful things coming their way. And what I kept observing is that when we started to think about it in terms of, okay, where do you want to go? What kind of life do you want to have? Just a couple little tweaks for people made them feel like things weren't happening to them, but that they actually were creating something. And what I kept noticing is it was that people that were barely trying to survive, who when things would shift in their mind and in their perspective, it would feel like a whole different life. And a lot of these ideas actually come out of very, very practical. The whole thing is a risk, so you might as well take a risk in a direction that has some meaning and significance to it.
Yeah.
So I totally understand the critique, and I hear the question.
But this is, I mean, this is a perfect book for all the Oprahites out there, and all those that are sort of involved in, well, Harper One or their new line of books, Elixir. I mean, this is you're right in this pocket, right? T.D. Jakes, Elizabeth Gilbert, Anthony Robbins. But I tell you, John MacArthur still hates you. I know he does.
Well, it's interesting. I've been doing these events around the country, and a woman came last week whose young son in his 20s was recently violently murdered.
Oh.
And she brought her daughter, who's just lost her brother. And it was interesting to interact with the ideas in the book around a woman who's – and now the murderer is about to go to trial. So this woman is about to go through a very public trial involving the man who murdered her son. And it was really interesting how many of the ideas in the book she was relating to as applying to her current situation, which is always interesting when you're a writer. You aren't thinking of, I hope this book helps people whose son just got killed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
So sometimes when you talk about Oprah followers, there's sometimes that what that means people is a perceived lightness. But this is a book about suffering, failure, risk, surrendering the outcomes. Loss. This is a book not just about, hey, everything's great, but about how do you maintain some sense of sanity and maybe even enjoy when the world is as troubling and dark and destructive as it can be.
Okay, it's a great segue into overcoming boredom, cynicism, and despair.
Yeah.
First of all, that sounds like the old song they sang on Hee Haw. Do you remember that?
No.
No. Okay. Never mind. I'm so friggin' old. There was an old.
Oh my word! The dating on that is pretty awful.
They used to sit around in the cornfields and sing "Gloom, Despair, Agony on Me," and it was just kind of taking the Mickey out of the country music scene. So, for all the country music listeners out there who want to overcome boredom, cynicism, and despair, it's not formulaic, though, man. Right? But it is intentional.
Absolutely. Yeah. And your intentions are incredibly powerful. And one of the reasons why in the book I talk about boredom, cynicism, and despair is in many ways these are spiritual diseases. They're things that happen in our heart. So boredom is essentially this belief that there's nothing interesting to make here. And what I just kept observing interacting with people is when you would show them that their particular mood or how they feel about their life was rooted in deeper perspectives about the very nature of the world and creation – a lot of times you'd have like a, oh, sort of moment, which is not an easy sort of, here are 10 steps to, you know, kick an ass or whatever it is, but more, let's get down to the base level sort of assumptions you have about your life, and let's see how you're approaching this, because maybe if we shed some light on that, we'll be able to head in a different direction.
But is this a success book?
Well, actually, the book makes fun of, like, I have a whole chapter on success, almost like a over-the-top sort of, no, it's not a success book. It's a book about creating a life that's actually worth living. And I actually talk about the emptiness of what many people consider success. I tell this story growing up in high school about the neighbor who got a Corvette. A couple days later, he sold it. And I remember asking him, why'd you sell it? And he's like, 'cause I got a Corvette. And then I realized I have a Corvette. And it was just this amazing moment of realizing as a 16-year-old, oh, his whole life he worked to buy a Corvette, which was a big deal in Lansing, Michigan in 1986. And then he got the Corvette, and he was like, oh, I have a Corvette. And there's this sort of success can often bring with it this sort of existential thud, like everything you were working for, you got. Now what? And I'm sort of trying to give people a different way to look at things where there's a sense of more wonder and awe that you get to do this rather than, if I just get that, then I'll be happy, and then you get it. And you're just sort of like, what?
Right. Okay, so what I hear you saying is that Benny Hinn will not be buying this book.
Well, you know, we don't discriminate. Everybody's welcome to buy the book.
Okay, all right. I want to talk about this You encourage readers to find their passion or this. What's the Japanese word for it? I got to see if I can pronounce this word right. Is it ikigai, which reminds me of Donald Trump? Ikigai?
Right. I have no idea how it's pronounced. Ikigai? Okay. Maybe you say it that way so it doesn't sound like you're talking about an icky guy.
Okay.
But this fascinating Japanese word and the tradition surrounding it of what is it that gets you up in the morning, and how they have this understanding that what gets you up in the morning, or they also call it your reason for being, will take some work, and it will probably constantly be shifting and changing, and that's just part of it.
Do you not think that we as North Americans, A, we have our sense of entitlement, B, there's this consumeristic thing and narcissistic thing. We also have really hard time practicing delayed gratification. And so I think the group of people on the planet that get the boredest, the easiest, are us folks, you know? I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean.
Isn't that strange? More options, more technology, more entertainment.
Yeah.
More literature on how to have a meaningful life and feel fulfilled. And yet this is the group of people that seems to be the most bored, the most prescription medication, the most ways of trying to escape this. It's weird. It's completely upside down. It's completely upside down, which is why in the book I keep talking about creating a life. Like this sense of the world is unfinished and participating in the ongoing creation of the world. What kind of world do you want to make? Let's go back to some of these really basic questions, because otherwise it's just you're just one more person consuming.
Okay, let's specifically talk to Buddy Factory Guy or Meathead Hockey Player up here in Canada.
Yeah.
They're not scratching that deep. They're really, life's okay, and they're not reaching too high. But, you know, they wish there was more, but they're providing. They're putting bread on the table. They're getting it done, you know?
Yeah.
I'm starting to sound like a Dodge Ram commercial here. So what do you say to those people? Like, do you even want to poke them and wake them up? Isn't it better that they're half asleep anyway? Because then their expectations aren't going to go higher and their disappointment isn't going to ride along with it?
Well, you are correct. If you're woken up, there is the chance that you'll try something and it won't go how you want it to. So anytime somebody moves from, I'm just going to stay in this groove, which could also be called a rut, life is risky. The question simply to me is, what's possible? And is there all sorts of meaning and joy just below the surface, just waiting for a person? But I also know that your question is an interesting one, because the moment you're that guy, you know this from friendships, the moment you're that guy going, don't you want more? Come on. Now you're just annoying.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And what I observed over the years is that some people, they're fine. And your efforts to sort of get them to see what you've seen, you just appear like a prick. You know what I mean? It's not compelling at all.
Yeah.
But other people have a gnawing restlessness, like there's got to be more. It can't just be go to work, come home, Netflix, go to bed. I've interacted with so many people over the years who couldn't give it much clear language other than, please tell me there's more to life than this. And that's hopefully where a book like this comes in, is, all right, I think there is. How would we go about figuring that out? Let's try this. Let's try that.
So is this Purpose-Driven Life 2.0?
No, it has a different title, and I doubt that it will sell 22 million copies. And I don't have my own airplane. So there are three reasons right there.
Oh, man. No, it does sound, you know, in that it's in that vein of sort of American pom-pom cheerleader, you go girl for Jesus kind of book.
I hope that it doesn't have a rah-rah pom-pom, because I hope the book is very honest about the suffering and struggle of life.
Ah.
And I hope that it doesn't in any way, hey, just go do it and you'll be fine. I hope it is very unflinchingly honest about life is very painful and difficult, and lots of things will come your way that you never saw coming that will punch you in the face and leave you bloody on the street. Like, that's actually how life is. So knowing that and being honest about that, what does it look like to create a life worth living? So I would hope that it doesn't have any of those sometimes there's sort of an easy American thing that you're referring to, and this book is not that book.
Good. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
And that's actually what I was trying to do, is there is a really important role of the move from disempowered to empowered. You know what I mean? There is a, sometimes no matter wherever we are in life, we need a fresh word about you can do it. No matter how educated, sophisticated, wealthy you are, sometimes we just need somebody to say, you can do this.
Yeah.
You can go after this. So there is that need, but the problem is when that is not framed in a larger context of, and life is really difficult, and sometimes it's incredibly morally ambiguous, and best friends will turn on you, and people will break your heart, and you're going to lose a bunch of money on things that seemed like a good investment at the time. Other than that, you can do it. And so I hope in this book to paint it how it is, and yet it be inspiring, but an inspiring that's honest and earned. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I hope that it's really, really empowering to people, but without cutting any corners.
Okay, people, when they think of Rob Bell, I don't know what they, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, you're a big deal, and people tend to forget the people that are big deals also have a soul and have feelings. And so you've taken a lot of heat over the years, and I know that, that you know, stuff affects you. Stuff gets through. You're not an impervious jerk. There's enough of those in the evangelical scene. We don't need you to be running around doing that. And I don't think you're really in that scene anyway. So what I'm trying to get at here is whose criticism over the years, and I don't know whether you can even say this. Maybe I'm asking that, you know, brutal interview question that just you need to go, you know what, let's not talk about this. But anyway.
No, we can talk about anything.
No, well, hold on. So whose criticism hurt the most and whose criticism meant the most?
Great question. Honestly, I've never Googled my name, so I don't have.
Well, no, don't give me. I know you're going to
say.
Oh, I don't know. Nobody. I don't know who says stuff about me. You've got to know. You got to know that John MacArthur hates your guts. He wants to cut you.
Does he really? That is awesome.
He wants to cut everybody. But yeah. So you don't know who criticized you. Are you really telling me that?
Well, no. Here's our. I've never gone Googling to find out who exactly said what.
Right.
I am aware that certain people have been very outspoken, and one example would be I interacted with a Fancy Pants famous Christian leader one time,
mm-hmm.
who had a whole list of things. But what was so interesting is his own personal brokenness was so apparent, and I would just ask very straightforward questions about his own life and where does all this anger come from? And he clearly hadn't done the most basic work on his own wounds and the abuse he suffered as a child.
Right.
And the idea that he would publicly be taking shots at me when it's so clearly this is a wounded man who does a act. It's almost like a showman. You know
what
I mean?
Yep.
So that hurts at some level that all these people are following him and see him as a paragon of virtue and spiritual maturity. And this is somebody so wounded. It was shocking. I just was sort of dumbfounded.
Hmm.
And then secondly, I would say people who would do the sort of, I remember one guy saying to me, I'm leaving the church. Because you have to understand, Rob, I've studied the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
As if I hadn't spent, as if I sort of hadn't done the work. You know what I mean? You don't understand. Some of us take this seriously. And then I do know the number of people who their message is that billions of people are going to be tortured forever in hell because they didn't believe in a Jesus they'd never heard of. And then people would call that the good news. It just is completely bass ackward to me. Do you know what I mean? That's flying upside down.
Yeah, well, I mean, but you attacked that industry, man. You got to expect some heat when you attack.
I love that you called it an industry.
Yeah.
So to be honest with you, what hurts the most, I believe in Jesus. I actually think there's something happening in the world. I actually think there's good news for everybody. I actually think God loves everybody. The idea somehow that I've wandered off the path. No. I actually just took the path where it takes you. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. Like the Jesus message is really, really radical and expansive and inclusive and mysterious and revolutionary.
Because
I'm some aberration or some heretic, I actually just took the whole thing seriously. And what it seriously says is to love your neighbor. And if you do that, you're going to discover that this is about what it means to be human, not building more religions and talking about how different we are. It's about how alike we are. You know what I mean? Like, this tradition has some very, very, very radical engines that drive it. And so honestly, that's what hurts the most is when somebody thinks that somehow I've wandered off into the deep weeds. No. I just actually took it where it goes.
You scare me. You frustrate me and you scare me.
Yes. Why is that?
Well, because you're somewhere that I think I'm going, but I'm not sure I want to go.
Well, okay, now if you're scared, imagine if you had a large church and had a Twitter account.
Yeah.
No wonder people get riled up.
Yeah.
The Jesus message, if you actually believe that God is the God of the oppressed, and if you actually believe that loving your neighbor is at the heart of it, your neighbor might be a Muslim. Your neighbor might be, who knows who your neighbor is, but you might suddenly discover a common humanity that will make all of your religious divisions seem silly compared to your honest, genuine human bonds with each other. This tradition is way more radical than anybody lets on.
Who are the people in your neighborhood?
My neighborhood, West Hollywood.
Oh, man. I don't think Sesame Street really had a clue what your neighborhood is like, you know?
My neighborhood is literally, like, we had a homeless guy out on the street, but then 20 yards down are like a number of celebrities that you heard of who have just pulled their Bentleys over to make phone calls. It's completely everything is in this neighborhood. It's unbelievable.
Listen, before we say goodbye, Easter, what do you guys do Easter? Do you eat satanic chocolate at Easter?
We're actually right now, my daughter is painting eggs to hide around the backyard because of that verse in the Gospel of Mark. And then and then we'll do chocolate, you know, based on what Jesus says to his disciples.
Yes.
And I'm actually going to do a live stream resurrection sermon on Facebook on Easter morning.
Wow.
Resurrection morning. And then the legendary comedian Pete Holmes and his lovely girlfriend Val will come over for a big meal.
That's nice. What we'll do. Nice.
And we'll be swimming.
We just lost a legendary comedian, Gary Shandling, of course.
Oh, I was thinking about him this morning. I loved him. That hit amazing. I live across the street and around the corner from the Improv.
Oh, yeah.
And they just put up on the marquee last night, if you don't think that nice guys finish first, then you don't know where the finish line is. Mm. Gary Shandling is what the marquee says. So good.
Nice. Nice. That's really... Listen, the last time you were on our show was, believe it or not, it was 2014, 2 years ago. And the last time you were on our show, we were doing the same thing. We do a game show called Soul Survivor, where five religious tribes compete for the soul of one person.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So we had, I put an ad out, and I found a bunch of guys who were interested in checking out different faiths, and we picked one of them. And then we had tribal leaders represent different tribes, and our guy could ask them any question, right? And so the first tribe we had was, Tribe Mormon, and we had one of the leading Mormon scholars on, and then our soul survivor goes, first question out of his mouth, so essentially you're a racist organization, right? That's the first question out of his mouth. And then he says, hey, wait, and 4 years before the Mormonism started, your leader was in prison for fraud. Is that right? So the Mormon guy hung up. Then the next week we had Tribe Hindu. And representing Tribe Hindu was Arun Gandhi, the grandson of Gandhi. Really cool guy. And then Tribe Muslim, Sheikh Hamza Yusuf. You and he would have great conversations together. He's basically the Elvis of Islam. And then Tribe Buddhism, of course, we had Bob Thurman. Have you ever done any work with Bob?
No, is that Uma's dad?
Yeah, Uma's dad. Yep. First American ordained Tibetan monk. And then we had representing Tribe Jesus, Paul Young. And the guy picked Tribe Jesus. And I thought for sure there's no way he'd pick Tribe Jesus unless we had Rob Bell representing Tribe Jesus. But turns out the standards were low, so he picked Paul Young. Just thought I'd share that way, because it was just ironic. Last time you were on our show, we were doing Soul Survivor as well.
That's great.
Yeah, anyway. All right, listen, Rob Bell on The Drew Marshall Show, New York Times bestselling author of How to Be Here, A Guide to Creating a Life Worth Living, robbell.com. Go to the Facebook page on Easter and check out his live thing. I'm sure it'll be amazing. Rob, thanks for stirring it up, for being who you are, you know?
Always great talking to you.
Thank you, Rob. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I ain't singing for no devil, I ain't singing for no God, I ain't striving toward no heaven, it's all just a big facade. My life is a testimony.